Scott.
This is Pat.
We got a great program this week, as usual. Hey, we are going to talk about how hedge funds and private equity funds work and why most individual investors should avoid them.
We're also going to talk about how you save for your retirement, whether you have a company 401k or 457 or 403b. You don't have it. Kids don't have it. We're going to show you how you can save for retirement on a tax-deferred basis.
And more, so stick around for Hanson McLean.
Providing guidance as you plan and transition into retirement for over two decades, here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for being with us today, both myself and my co-host here. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And the nice thing about a program like this, if you want to be a part of the program and have a question for us, you can call us up. You can be anonymous.
You can even say you're calling on behalf of a friend. You don't even say you're doing it for yourself.
I have a friend. And then we're just going to give you our straightforward advice. We are not trying to sell you anything or anything like that. So you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
That happens often with.
In fact, if you're getting pitched something, if someone's got the biggest, best investment ever for you, which comes with a free medical. Read life insurance, call us and ask us a question. You see a lot of that being peddled right now. Universal indexed life insurance,
yes.
Indexed annuities, lots of non-liquid, high-fee products.
I remember when I first started the business, there was a guy I had on his desk, the acronym that spelled out, there is no such thing as a free lunch. And I think I was thinking about the other day how important that is in investing because
there's a cost associated.
Yes. And anytime someone's pitching something that sounds, yeah. There's just always remember there's no such thing as a free lunch.
So if they're pitching you something, someone's got to give us a call at 888-2 Hanson. That's 888-2 Hanson.
Yeah. And we'd love to take your call again. And numerically, that number, by the way, is 888-242-6766. And we'd love to take your call. So why don't we start off? In the Sacramento area, we're going to talk with Aaron. Aaron, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Aaron.
Hey, I have three properties now. Two are technically, for tax purposes, my residence, one of which my mom lives in, and the other is a rental. With all that being said, I'm trying to look at my options with coming up with cash flow by leveraging these properties. I've looked at a cash-out refi option because the values are high enough to pay one of the, these are townhomes, two of these are townhomes, cash out refi to pay one off.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of curious how you guys would comment on whenever you do stuff like that. I have a CPA, which I'm looking at all the consequences, but.
So what is the, can we break down each one of these? So let's call it residence one, the one you live in. What's the value of it?
It is roughly $300,000, if I had to guess on,
And what do you owe on it?
$240,000.
And what's the interest rate?
I just inherited that through a prob. It's at 4%.
Okay. And you inherited that?
I did. I went through probate when my father passed away.
Okay. So you've got
property.
A cost basis on it. Okay. And then the second property, the one you said your mother lives in, what's the value of that?
Yeah, that's a townhome that Zillow's saying is in the 220 range and 065,000.
And what's the interest rate on that?
That one's at 5%.
Okay, and then tell me about the rental.
The rental's right next door to the same home, so it's identical property.
Okay, so 220, what do you owe on that?
Valued at 250. That one's also right in the 60s, like 62,000.
And the interest rate?
That one's at 5.8.
Okay, and how's your credit?
High sevens.
Okay. You want to refinance as much, whether you take money out of this or not is a completely different question, but you want to refinance these mortgages, as soon as you possibly can. You'd use property one and two, the one you live in,
okay.
And probably the one your mother lives in.
I would say ideally have your mother with having that one paid off.
Why?
Yeah. I think because I have no reimbursement, so I'm all out of pocket for that. And her health is bad, so I'm looking at having to fund a full retirement.
What happens if Kate takes all the equity out of these to invest in somewhere else and suddenly can't pay them? And
we were going to get to why he's taking the equity out was my next question. Okay. So Scott, we're going the same place.
So I think mom's place is sacred place. I would have that one paid off.
You're a good son, Scott. I agree with you.
Yeah, thank you.
We've just seen at the 25 years doing this, I've seen everything.
Yeah. So you want to take the mom's place and refinance, and you want to take the rental, refinance the rental. You're going to get a lower interest rate. Why do you want to take cash out?
Well, it would be the way I looked at it. These loans are through Wells Fargo, and their officer gave me a printout showing what the numbers look like to do a cash out refi on the rental. So I would owe like both principal amounts, and then I would own outright the one next door.
So,
and I would save about $180 a month.
You're not taking any cash away from the deal. You're not saying, oh, I'm going to refinance this, and in the transaction, I'm going to get $50,000 or $100,000. You're just talking about reallocating the debt against two properties rather than three. Is that correct?
Yes.
It's a great idea.
Yes.
Great idea. Great idea.
Totally
agree. I'd shop it. No, there's nothing wrong with, I'm sure, how do I say this diplomatically? I'm sure that
with the bank that's been in the news with the...
Well, I'm not going to go there, but I'm sure the rate that they quoted you is good or fine, but I would shop it nonetheless to an independent broker.
Sure. Okay.
But I like the idea.
So the only other thing, can you guys comment real quick? I know you have other callers probably, but my other option I'm looking at is selling the rental because I do have other cash needs from my own personal home. I need a roof. I need how I'm going to fund those things don't add up right now, but
how old are you?
$255,000.
How old are you?
I'm 39.
And what's your cost 39. Basis in the rental? What did you pay for it? Or did you inherit that as well?
Both my townhomes, which the ones I don't live in, we put 20% down, and they were at the good point of the market where they were right around $90,000.
So let's qualify this question. Would I be comfortable selling a rental property in this environment? Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very comfortable selling a rental property in this environment. Extremely comfortable selling a rental property in this environment. And if you'd listen to the show for any length
of
time, you're going to pay the capital gains. That is correct. But that let's leave the capital gains aside. I'd be more comfortable selling a rental property in this environment and paying the capital gains. In fact, I've sold a rental property in this environment and paid the capital gains. And
what
if you listen,
numbers look like roughly percentage wise.
Oh, so
what's your cost basis?
You said 90 is what he paid for it. You probably got some cost in there. Probably 35,000.
So I'd be looking at. So if I sold the property tomorrow for $250,000 and I paid the principal of $62,000, that difference would get taxed?
No, it doesn't. Matter. It doesn't matter what you paid. It doesn't matter what you owe on it.
No,
it's what
irrelevant.
You paid for it and how much money you've put in, and then you've got some depreciation.
You said you're working with an accountant. I'd take a look at that before I made a decision on that. Look at your tax consequences.
For sure.
I mean, ideally, you move into it for 2 years.
Okay.
Well, you'd be better off selling your. You'd be better off selling your primary residence
and moving into that rental.
And moving into that rental if capital gains.
That's what I'm looking at.
From a tax point,
I would avoid the gains.
Absolutely.
That's correct.
Yep.
That's correct. And if you're comfortable doing that, that's the best thing you can do.
Yes, no question.
Okay. And then, so I'm pretty sure you guys would agree that pulling any money out of any retirement fund is the worst idea ever.
Yes.
Right? Well, I don't know if it's the worst idea ever. It's certainly on the list.
Worst idea ever. Of all things, abandoning your children.
Well, obviously I needed to restructure that.
Spying for Russia.
Worst thing ever.
Finding cash flow for my properties, coming up with cash flow.
No, you're not going to have a cash flow problem if you sold your primary residence. And is that the one you need the roof on? The primary residence?
Sorry, breaking up.
Do you need the new roof on the primary residence?
Where I live, yeah, I do.
Yeah, sell the primary residence, move into that. This is the market to sell it in.
I would agree.
This is the market to sell it in. You can avoid capital gains.
Yeah.
You'd sit back for a couple years.
Get rid of the big mortgage.
You get rid of the big mortgage.
That'd be your best thing.
Yeah, there's no question. And then you don't have to fix anything. Just listen, run a vacuum, power wash the outside, slap a for sale sign on it.
Yeah, things sell pretty well right now.
That is what they're moving at, especially at that price range.
Yep.
Yeah, don't do any improvements on it. I wouldn't even put up fresh paint. I might clean the windows.
And you'd still have a little cookies cooking at open
yeah,
house.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Whatever they do.
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, good luck, Aaron.
Appreciate
guys,
the call.
I love your show. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about, you know, I was given a workshop and someone said, are rental properties a good thing? And the answer is yes.
Of course.
Sometimes. Every asset possibly is a good thing sometimes. But every asset class goes through.
Well, when you have other financial pressures, other financial issues.
Not so much.
Then sometimes you think, So, obviously, in this last situation,
perfect move.
Yeah.
So, the primary move to the rental.
Yep. You know, Pat, there is a way, and I know, obviously, we've talked about with our clients, that people can transfer their property at death without having a will or a living trust.
Real property. A house.
No, I was just talking about assets, like your typical brokerage account.
Yes.
The simplest.
The easiest, least expensive way to do it.
Yeah, and so just like you can have a beneficiary on a life insurance product or a beneficiary on a retirement account, your IRA, your 401k has beneficiaries, regardless of what you have in your living trust, you have an IRA that lists out your two kids, let's say, as beneficiaries, and your living trust says, oh, by the way, pay them out slowly, don't give them the chunk of money until they're older. Well, it doesn't matter what your trust says. If your beneficiaries are your kids, it's going to be transferred automatically to your beneficiaries, not what your trust says. But if you're in a position where, look, I don't have any strings attached, my money gets transferred when I pass away, you can set up your other accounts on what's known as a transfer of death, payable on death. And by setting it up that way, it's just like having a beneficiary designation on.
You can do it at your bank account. You can do it with a brokerage account. Can't do it with an IRA. You need the beneficiaries on the IRA.
But you don't need it.
But it gets there. That's correct.
Yeah.
And even for in some states, real property, they've made it much easier to transfer on death in some states.
And I guess that just comes with a title company gets that.
Yeah, it depends on the state. But yes,
it does depend on the state. Some states are so complicated with real estate transactions. You got to get the legal attorneys involved and all kinds of.
And who doesn't love getting an attorney involved, huh? Come on, kids. So,
yeah, love getting away attorneys involved. I don't know. But I think it's just prudent to have things set up in such a manner to make it simpler. So
make it easier.
Yeah. I wanted to discuss something that, because we get these questions periodically, and you certainly read about them, and you hear about these hedge fund managers or these private equity managers. So I want to talk a little bit about how does a hedge fund or a private equity fund work?
And what are they?
What the heck are they? Right.
And why are there less today than there were a few years ago? Hedge funds.
Probably more private equity firms.
Might be.
So both of these, and we can throw venture capital funds in there. The way these are structured to begin with is not like a mutual fund, where a mutual fund, you can just buy a mutual fund today and sell tomorrow, or an exchange traded fund. You can buy an exchange traded fund today and sell tomorrow.
And they're traded on an exchange, or they're redeemed from the mutual fund company, so you can buy or sell at least once a day.
With these sort of funds, hedge funds, private equity funds, venture capital funds, they are structured as limited partnerships. They are limited partners. So if you go to invest in a hedge fund, let's say, you say, I'm going to be a partner with this firm that's going to manage the money. And then I'm going to be subject to the whims of the.
You
have an operating agreement, but.
You're in a limited partnership. And in all likelihood, since you're putting your money in and you didn't start it, you're probably not the managing partner.
No, of course, you're not the managing partner.
So,
but usually what happens when you are a limited partner, there's some. First of all, there are restrictions.
Liquidity.
Oftentimes they say if it's a hedge fund, well, you can't get your money out. These are the windows, but we might actually shut the windows down at other periods of time. So.
And what they might say is, you can get your money out 3 years, starting 3 years from now, but you can only request it twice a year, and you can only request 10% of your deposit. That would be a common restriction
yes.
in a hedge fund.
And
And by the way, we can change that at any time if we wish.
Yes. So that's the legal structure behind that. So first of all, before you thinking I'm going to want to invest in something like that, just remember, is this the kind of structure you want maybe for your retirement assets or for some portion of your retirement assets? Then what you're really doing is you're giving your capital to some group that has some strategy. Sometimes it's a black box strategy. Sometimes it's a publicized strategy whereby they are going to have an attempt to get you some return, right? And with that, they will have a management fee. Typically, it's been 2% management fee. Although
they've come down a little bit over the last year and a half as the returns have fallen on these hedge funds.
Plus, they'll say we'll take typically 20% of the return that's in excess of some number. Let's say it's 6% or 8%.
And so, we're talking about hedge funds here.
Yes. So we'll take 2% just to manage the money plus 20% of the profits above some level. So before you invest in a hedge fund, and maybe you have an advisor that's saying, "Why don't let's invest in either this hedge fund or this fund of funds.
Or this fund of hedge funds.
First of all, think of those things, the liquidity issues.
The pricing issues.
And if you look at the studies, hedge funds as a group don't perform well, in large part because of the fees.
Yeah. In fact, that we've seen a number of hedge funds shrink significantly in the last few years. Significantly.
Yeah, because it's typically because some star manager, someone who had a great track record for a number of years.
And they fell into a bad place. And so as they underperform the markets, as many of them have, the amount of monies that have been invested in hedge funds has shrunk. Private equity is a little bit different, though.
Private equity is a little bit different. With private equity, and we're seeing more private equity firms because companies aren't going public like they used to.
Yes.
Right? So
yeah.
Equity.
Smaller companies are not going public like they used to because of the regulatory environment.
Yeah, who wants to go public anymore?
The Sarbanes-Oxley Act.
Yes. Who wants to go public anymore? I mean, really, it's just the compliance.
Some big companies like to go public.
Snap went.
Yeah, depending upon how much money they're raising. But smaller companies have a tendency not to want to go public because of the cost associated in the compliance.
And the term equity typically refers to ownership. So equities, sometimes you hear people talk equities, they'll refer to stocks. So private equity, think of it as private owner. And with a private equity fund, they'll invest in businesses. And their goal is to help these businesses grow in value.
Maybe they'll actually use a little bit of leverage or debt when they're buying it. So they'll put in some cash and they'll take some loans.
They typically have fee structures somewhat similar to hedge funds. Sometimes they're not as expensive. But the liquidity on a private equity can be even more challenging.
Yes, because they typically are investing in non-liquid assets.
And your money can be tied up for several years, and even furthermore, it could be that you invest in a private equity fund, and 10 years down the road, it's still in existence,
and you haven't gotten your money or all of it out.
You might have gotten your principal and some earnings off that, but yeah. The lack of liquidity, and of course, venture capital, similar kind of structure, they invest in growing young startup companies.
The difference between venture capital and private equity is not much.
No. Venture capital tends to invest in
a little
newer
bit
companies.
Newer companies. New,
yeah. Unproven
concepts.
Still. Private equity tends to.
And then there's a whole other layer called angels, which come before venture capitalists.
I don't know why they call themselves angels. We're the angels.
We're here to save you.
You're the vultures.
We're the angels.
Yeah. Anyway.
So just be careful. If you're being pitched these by your advisor, any of that, private equity, hedge funds.
Most individuals have no business and be involved in
that. That is correct.
Unless you've got multiple millions. And even then, if you want a simple life, you might choose not to be involved in these. So most individuals looking at retirement, they really have no reason whatsoever to be involved in these vehicles. So anyway, we're going to go back to the phones. Again, if you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's talk to Mary Lou in Colorado. Mary Lou, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. Yes, I am wondering about a whole life policy that I've had. My parents bought it for me when I was just a teenager. So we've paid off the whole life, and now we're building on to what they call as dividends.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard multiple times that those are not good. I'm basically wasting my money.
Mm. Maybe. I wouldn't recommend you buy one today, but if you have one.
Some of those old contracts are pretty good.
Are pretty good. So tell us a little bit about it. How much is the face value on the contract?
My parents bought it for me at $10,000.
And it's probably going to have a ton of paid-up additions now. Is that correct?
Yes. I believe last time my husband showed me he caught me off guard, but the last time we looked at the statement, which I don't even think that we get anymore, but I know we're still paying into it from our bank statements, but it was at 16.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so okay. some of the old contracts, they might have a minimum, if you kind of figure out the internal rate of return, some of them are actually pretty good, 4% guaranteed minimum return. I would, at a minimum, I'd quit paying into this.
Exactly.
Okay.
There's no reason you need to keep paying into it.
What's the cash value in the contract?
That I don't know.
It can't be.
It might be $8,000 or $9,000.
Yeah. I would quit paying. I'd quit paying for it. And I think of these as my last emergency dollars that I needed.
Oh.
I'd plan on just keeping it and having it until you, unless you need the money during your lifetime, I'd plan on just having the last dollars you'd ever spend. And odds are it was passed down to heirs.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for the rest of the listeners,
don't bother cashing it.
For the
now.
Rest of you the listeners, this is not an endorsement for the purchase of whole life insurance.
But there are times when it still makes sense for whole life insurance.
It can make sense, yeah. But by you saying that,
95% of the time, I think it's a waste.
Okay. Thank you, Scott.
Maybe 99% of the time.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah. Sometimes for estate planning purposes,
it may make sense. Yeah. But if you've got an old contract like this. Some of them have guarantees in there,
yep,
that the insurance company would love it if you drop those,
yeah,
contracts, because many of them lose money on. So I just leave it alone and not worry about quit putting more money,
yep,
into it. All righty?
Okay.
All right.
Just keep track in our life insurance folders for when I pass that they know to go and contact. It was Prudential at the time.
Yes,
yeah,
that's
and
exactly
I
right.
assume that you've changed the beneficiaries to your husband and then your children,
yeah,
or wherever.
Yeah.
All righty?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
Perfect. All right.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend, Mary Lou. Thanks for calling Hanson McLean.
You bet.
You know, Pat, there are a lot of people that have old life insurance policies sitting around. And I ran into a situation in the last year where someone had failed to update the beneficiary. Here's
okay.
the situation. So these were clients.
Oh, I don't even want to hear this story.
Well, I'm telling it because I want this is a scare tactic for the listeners to make sure you're up to date. So these were clients of Hanson McLean that had an adult child.
Okay.
And that adult child had a couple of children who had now grown up to the age of adult, college age kids. Their child passed away and they had listed their ex-spouse as the beneficiary. They'd been divorced for over 10 years.
Okay, so we know how this ends.
Did not get along well. What they told me is that the ex-spouse was a little crazy, etc.
So the money went...
Not to the kids.
Who were college students.
That's correct. But
and of age. And of age. They were adults. They were,
yes,
adult college,
absolutely,
students.
Went to the ex.
Which...
And guess what the ex did with the assets? Kept them.
Yes.
And said, well, I'm not, he listed me as the beneficiary.
That's just the way it is. And there's nothing anyone can do about it.
Nothing at all.
So it is vitally important to actually check your beneficiaries and change them in life events. What are those life events?
Well, divorce is one.
Right.
For sure.
Check your beneficiary
unless there's some reason you want the money to go to it.
Check your beneficiary designation on any life insurance that you are getting through your employer at retirement.
That's often overlooked. Or even if you're working, you might have some group policy.
Just check those beneficiaries. If the kids become of age or are on their own, that's the death of a spouse or a child would be another reason to check
correct.
The beneficiaries.
Or having another child.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, you get it taken care of in a will or a trust, but you list them as a beneficiary.
Or changing the way you feel about how your children are spending money if they're listed as a beneficiary. because...
Or if you feel that your child might have a substance abuse issue.
Most certainly. That you might want those dollars directed into a trust as a beneficiary so that you can control the outflow of the dollars at your death to that child.
Yes.
The substance abuse thing is real.
Absolutely.
You want to put some fuel on a fire, give a young man or young lady or anyone with a substance abuse problem a big pile of cash.
Well, not only that. You give a young person a big pile of cash who doesn't have a substance use problem, it could turn one in. I mean, I hate to say it.
Yeah, we've seen that.
Yeah, more times than. Well, now I'm getting depressed. But stick around because when we come back from the break, it will no longer be depressing. It'll be exciting. And again, we'll take some calls. 1-888-2-HANSEN to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll be right back.
Back to one of the longest running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. You know that we just said it was one of the longest running programs. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a great program or a good program.
It's just long running. Over 20 years. So if we're new to you, thanks for joining us. If you've been a longtime listener, thanks for that as well.
Yeah. And did you realize that roughly half of us do not have a 401k or employer-sponsored savings plan through our employer?
A half of American workers.
That's correct. Now, in all fairness, if you look at professionals, much less than half.
Yes. I
mean, the majority have a 401k plan at work. But
yeah, I bet that there's a dollar cutoff there that you could actually almost peg as to whether they have
fair, it. Yeah. Migrant farm workers don't have a 401k.
People that work in fast food or retail probably don't always have access to a 401k.
Yeah. So if you don't, the question is, how can you still save for retirement? Because you still can.
But there are many companies that actually have professionals in them that don't have 401ks for a variety of reasons. If you work at a company that has a lot of people that are, let's say, working for less than $40,000 a year, and there's a few people that are working for $125,000 a year or plus.
That sounds like it's taking advantage of the worker.
I'm not advocating one way or the other. I'm just telling you what it looks like.
There was that one company where everyone was paid the exact same.
Oh, didn't end well. Guy out of Seattle. Did not end well.
Yeah.
He had a hard time attracting and retaining people because people compare themselves to other people. And we're not happy.
That guy's not working very hard. Why should I work so hard? When of course, that's what happened.
Right?
That's a microcosm of socialist
society.
So the question is, you don't have a 401k available through work. What can you do? So here's what we love about employer-sponsored retirement plans. The tax benefits are good, yes. But more importantly, it's that forced savings. It's the fact that the money is yanked out of the paycheck before you have a chance to spend it.
And if you actually treat it correctly. Unfortunately, not everyone treats it correctly. So what happens, according to Aon Hewitt, a research and human resources consulting firm, a third of the people roll their money into a new IRA, a third of the people leave it at their old employer, and a third of the people liquidate it. They cash it in before, which is absolutely
the wrong thing to do. You probably shouldn't even have had it.
That's right.
You're better off if not having it.
Yeah, correct. For most people, because of the tax and the penalties applied.
Those are the plans. If you looked at dollar figures, it'd be different.
Yes.
Not a third of the dollars.
No, third of the people.
And unfortunately, it's the third.
The people that need the money the most in retirement are the ones that actually take it out.
That's right. So, but you're working for a company. It doesn't offer a 401k. Obviously, one lobby for one, if it's possible. But with some of the increased regulations on 401ks, I could see some employers saying, you know, we're just not going to bother anymore. At some point in time, they're going to get to size where for a competitive reason they're going to have to. But you're seeing some companies just not offering it. So what you can do is, although you can't have the money sucked out of your paycheck, you could set up an automatic withdrawal from your checking account. And that's not difficult to do.
To a IRA?
Either to an IRA that you can set up through a brokerage account or an online discount firm or even a bank, which wouldn't necessarily recommend, but you can set up an investment account, IRA, and have money taken out each month
to a Roth IRA as well.
Or to a Roth IRA. go to either one of those.
I had this discussion with my 21-year-old the other day. Same discussion about how to do this.
He wants to save for his retirement?
He does.
At 21?
Yeah.
I had a similar discussion with my daughter.
How'd that go?
She wanted to borrow some money for something. She needed a new GoPro. And she's in school. She doesn't have a job right now. She's playing sports, which is great.
What's wrong with her old GoPro?
Oh, Dad, it's really old. I said, didn't you just buy it a couple years ago? Oh, yeah, but you know, it's old. So I said, well, she wanted to borrow money. I said, well, you know, last year I think you made about $5,000 during the summer and you spent it all. And she said, why don't you wait until you get a job this summer? She said, well, I'm going to spend it all again like I did last summer, is what she said to me. So I didn't give her the money for the GoPro.
Thank you.
Needless to say.
And anyway, so we talked about it a couple of weeks ago on the show. It's a discipline. Saving is a discipline. It's always hard. There's always competing factors. Always.
That's why if you can set it up.
The earlier you establish that discipline out of your paycheck on a 401k, if you don't have a 401k available, out of your checking account.
And if you want to put in more than an IRA or for whatever reason you don't want, nothing wrong with using a low-cost index fund. Think if you bought an S&P 500 fund.
Or a total market fund.
A total market and just put in a little bit.
$100 every 2 weeks when you get paid.
It's very tax efficient. Hardly any capital gain distributions.
And you got to start somewhere. You have to start somewhere. It's like going to the gym.
The end of the world if your company didn't offer 401k. It'd be nice, but there's no excuse for not saving for retirement.
You have the responsibility for your own retirement. No one else. Not the government, not your employer.
Although some states have come up with these.
They've tried.
And then I just saw a bill the other day. It was a state-sponsored 529 plans for every baby born.
That was a proposal.
I understand. Someone just automatically the state. I thought
they put in $250 to get a start.
It was going to be you had to opt out automatically. This every baby born, they're going to confiscate money from one person and give it to
the babies. Babies don't even know how to spend money.
But here's what you don't want to do.
This is why we should favor a part-time legislature. By the way.
Here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to buy a life insurance product as a means for your retirement savings.
You do not want to buy a life insurance product as a means to your retirement savings.
A life insurance, a universal life insurance, an equity index life insurance, a variable universal life insurance, a whole life insurance, those are not retirement products. And look, someone will tell you, yeah, but Scott, it grows tax deferred, and then you can get your money out tax free because you just borrow your own money out.
And why would you trust the tax man? I've heard that. At least this way, you never know what the tax you're going to pay on your IRA. At least this way, you'll never have to pay taxes.
You can borrow from other assets that have appreciated in value without paying taxes, not just life insurance.
That is correct.
You'd be much better off by having a low-cost index fund, for example. Just watch out for those life insurance.
And we've been harping on this thing for months. And if you want to guess why, it's because people who are otherwise very intelligent are coming to our office with products they want to know how to get out of. And it is difficult to help them.
Yeah.
And those are expensive life insurance products and annuities.
All right, 1-888-2-HANSEN to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Let's talk with Kirk. Kirk, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Fantastic, Kirk. What can we do for you?
The question I have two daughters in college, and we're both taking out loans to help out with the college payments, my daughter and myself. And I was wondering if I could consider, can I do a $10,000 gift and write that off to my daughter as part of her college expense, or is the whole college expense deductible?
No.
You can give her
$10,000. Yeah, but no. The challenge is you can only receive a tax deduction if money goes to a bona fide nonprofit, a 501c3 corporation. Now,
and while your daughter may appear to be a nonprofit
or charity case,
you don't get a tax deduction for it.
No.
Well, are you allowed to give $10,000 gifts?
Yeah, but yeah, but you don't even need to worry about that, because any amount of money that you actually pay towards their college education, if you write it to the college or the dorm or wherever, it doesn't matter what the amount is. You don't have to worry about the limits yeah. on that. So
you can give her more money in addition.
All college.
Yeah, there's no
all like, college expenses are deductible.
Let's say she was going.
They are not deductible.
Oh, correct.
I mean,
but they're not
itemizable.
No. None of that.
What Pat's stating is, it's you don't have to pay a gift tax for the privilege of paying for your daughter's education.
I may have answered a question you didn't even yes. ask.
That doesn't even pertain to most of the population, for that matter.
Correct. So you can't deduct it in any way, shape, or form, either the amount that you actually pay yeah. towards the college.
Yeah.
You can't deduct it.
Yeah.
Nor can you deduct the interest on a loan, for that matter, unless the home loan
has a home equity line of credit. Of under $100,000.
Correct. Do you think people really follow that $100,000 rule?
No, they don't. Sorry, Kirk. Wish we could help you out more
yeah.
there. Well, at least they'll hopefully they'll both graduate in four. Get them to graduate in four and make a lot of money so when you're old, they can take care of you in your old age. And you can say, remember back in the day when I was paying for your college.
Yeah, see how that works
yeah,
out
yeah.
for
part
you.
Part of my retirement plan, right?
Yeah. Good luck on that one. Yeah, good call luck us back in 10 years. Let us know.
Good luck there, buddy.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kirk. We both have two kids in college.
Yeah, and actually both of mine are planning on retiring. graduating in less than four.
Less than?
One at four and one less than four.
My son, I don't think anyone's over. It's like you kind of have to graduate in four, and I don't know if you can graduate early. They highly discourage graduating early. I don't know, whatever. But anyway, one of the things we'll see some changes in the future is on education. It has to. I was reading, I saw an article that it was the number of retirees, people in their 60s with student loans. And it was like 46% of those age 65 or older with student loans were in default on them.
Well, that makes sense.
Okay, not a big shock, right?
Right? If you haven't paid it off by 60, there's probably a good chance that you're
but
not
going
to come
on, the
off.
Cost of education keeps going up and up. And at some point in time, you got to question some of these colleges that have these huge tuitions where, and I'm not knocking, I know there are some professors that work extremely hard, great, diligent, like really there for the students. There are also some that teach a couple lectures a week and are almost never available to the students and have aides do the rest and make very good livings at it.
So
and some of these things, there's going to be a breaking point.
Brad, our vice president of marketing, was telling me the other day about how in the future it's conceivable that you actually could go to class with a virtual reality headset on and feel like you're in a regular classroom.
That's what he's predicting.
Yeah, which I thought was just fascinating. You think about it, you're in your bedroom, you've got a virtual reality glasses on, a headset, whatever they look like, and it feels like you're in a regular classroom. You're interacting.
That was his idea, what the future may look like.
I think it was brilliant.
Maybe they'll just plant the information in your head, you don't have to go.
I would do very, very well at that school. Where you don't have to try, it just comes to you. Perfect.
All right, it's time now. We do like every other week or something, right?
Yeah. We get to talk to our advisors.
It's time for Hanson McLean's Real Advice. We've got this little fancy jingle.
Snappy like music.
Real radio program here.
Yes, with highly produced.
And this is where we talk with an advisor. They talk about an experience they had with a client. Now, their experience with this particular client is not necessarily indicative of what experience you would have.
That's a disclosure right there.
Yes. You might have a horrible experience.
Or you could have a great experience.
You're not going to have a horrible experience. Actually, I could pretty much
stay. Well, we can't guarantee that you're not going to have a horrible experience.
We cannot guarantee that someone cannot have a... It's funny. So our industry is highly regulated, which it should be. Unlike some of these insurance products, which aren't and get sold by people that aren't even licensed. Well, they're licensed to sell insurance, but they're not. Anyway, so the securities industry is quite heavily regulated. The Securities and Exchange Commission does not allow investment advisors to use client testimonials.
Which means we, if a client wanted to come on the air and say that they liked us, we couldn't allow it.
I think as long as you state it's not, the disclosure on it's so bad, it's like.
So anyway, we have an advisor on every of the week or every other week that talks about a real life experience and interaction that they had with a client and how they helped solve that particular client's problems and made their situation better.
That's right. And today we've got Justin Wilson, and Justin is a certified financial planner, a certified fund specialist. He's been a member of the Hanson McLean team for over 7 years. He's got 14 years of industry experience, and he meets with clients and future clients in Northern California, in Folsom, and in Sacramento. Justin, thanks for being part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters today.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you doing?
Fantastic. Never better, I suppose.
Good to hear.
I might have been better at some periods of time.
So walk us through your situation and tell us a little bit about the client and what the situation was and what your what advice you offered.
Sure. So I started working with this couple almost a year ago now. We sat down after they attended one of our 7 personal decision points workshops. They had a lot of moving parts to their retirement plan, and actually retirement was the furthest thing from their mind. They have a child with special needs, and they needed to really look into establishing a special needs trust and funding it with assets that were in the child's name. They had another child who had a lot of savings for college in an UTMA account that was going to cause some problems in terms of qualifying for financial aid. And they were overweight equities in all of their portfolios. Unfortunately, a good chunk of it was in non-qualified dollars, so there was some pretty serious capital gains taxation that could come along with diversifying out of that. As well as they own 2 properties. Their primary residence they had moved into just to get into a school district they really liked for their eldest child. And then they had their former property that they lived in that they had turned into a rental. And they really wanted to know, you know, kind of what to do with the properties once the eldest child went away to college.
So they were doing fairly well financially. This needed some organization.
They were doing very well financially. Yes, absolutely. They're doing very well financially. They were able to save a lot of money in non-retirement accounts, in retirement accounts, and in accounts for their children to use for college and living expenses and things like that.
And so how did you help them then?
Well, one of the things we really wanted to look at, and it was top of mind for them as he's going away to college in a couple years, was the best way to utilize that UTMA account that they had for him.
And that was a Uniform Transfer to Minors Act. It's a way that you can set up an account in a kid's name, and it the assets eventually become the child's once they reach age of majority, age 21 or sometimes.
And they're not as tax efficient as a 529 for college funding. They're a little bit old school. They're not used as much.
That's why when you said, I was actually surprised when you said they had quite a bit in there because you don't see them.
You don't see them use much.
Yeah, they established this one back before 529 plans were available, and they just never saw the need to move it over to a 529 plan until they started going around to these different college savings workshops or seminars that they had attended. Even though this was set up quite a while ago, there wasn't a huge tax liability inside that UTMA account. And one of the main downsides to that UTMA was that it's considered 100% the child's asset when determining financial aid for college.
And what's a 529 considered?
The 529 plan is actually considered the asset of the parent, and only a certain percentage of it has to be used for the child's education in any given year.
Got it.
So we're looking at potentially converting that UTMA to a 529, which I wouldn't normally do this close to them going to college, but because there wasn't a lot of capital gains taxation in the UTMA, it made a lot of sense for them to move it over there because of what the child would qualify for in terms of financial aid when going away to college.
That's interesting. So you had them transfer it into an UTMA from the UTMA to a 529 plan. For the rest of the listeners, a 529 plan is where you put the money in, it grows tax deferred, and as long as the child is using, it doesn't even have to be a child, as long as the student is using it for secondary education, there's no taxation on the withdrawals. And you can change the beneficiary anytime you want, so you can name yourself, you can name your kids, you can name your grandkids as a beneficiary on a 529. So it's more tax efficient than an UTMA. All right, Justin.
The other main thing that was on their mind was they had a child with special needs who in about 4 years was going to start to be able to receive benefits from the government in terms of Social Security disability, Medicare, things like that. And unfortunately, or fortunately for them, but unfortunately for them, they also had a lot of assets in accounts in that child's name as well. And we're getting close to that look back period when they go to qualify for these benefits. So they really wanted to get on top of establishing and funding a special needs trust before they kind of got back into that look back window, so that when the child was eligible to qualify for Social Security and Medicare, he would be able to.
Justin, is it fair to say they've never been with a financial, sat down with a qualified financial advisor before, or did they have one now that just wasn't giving them proper direction? Or
they had met with an advisor in the past, but to me, from the conversations we had, it seemed more like it was a stockbroker type of relationship where it was focused solely on returns and product as opposed to solutions.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that.
So, and then the other side of it was they had bought a home about 40 miles away from where they had lived previously for the previous 20 years. And wanted to really look at moving back that way. The only reason they moved was to get into a better school district for their son. And since he's going to be graduating in a couple years, they didn't see themselves staying there long term. So one of the things they wanted to look at was, do we stay here? Do we sell this place, buy another place? Do we sell the primary and pay off the rental and move back into the rental? There was a lot of options there. But what looked like it was going to be the best for them was to sell the primary residence when their child went away to college, move back into the rental, and pay off the rental. It was going to save them somewhere between $3,000 and $3,500 a month in cash flow to move back into the rental and pay it off.
And so at the end of all this, were they comfortable with the fact that they were going to hit their goals with funding their child with the special needs, that trust, and get to a retirement at a reasonable age?
We haven't even started talking about the retirement aspect of it because they wanted to take care of the child's needs first and foremost. I've let them know that we'll be able to get them to retirement in the time frame they're looking at, but I haven't provided anything concrete to them yet in terms of cash flow analysis or anything like that. So, I can see the end game. I can see that they'll be able to make it to retirement when they're ready to, but we really haven't sat down and completed that aspect of it because the child going to college, the special needs trust, were really the two main things on their mind that they wanted to clear up before anything else.
Yeah. And as a good financial advisor, your job is to help them with
their goals.
And then obviously probably in the next year or two, you'll be working with them on their retirement plan, right?
Correct.
All right. I appreciate that. Just good work as always, Justin. Once again, thank you for being one of the great advisors at Hanson McLean.
Yeah. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Justin. And Hanson McLean, we don't give a pitch for our show. I mean, our firm very often, but mainly because I just find it. Sometimes I hear other radio programs and they're talking about their own firm all the time and it just. Regardless of the industry, and it's like, really?
Yeah.
But every once in a while, we talk about how great Hanson McLean is, because Hanson McLean, frankly...
We have good advisors.
We've got a great team of certified
good
financial
process,
planners.
Good employees. We call them team members,
we
I
have
think.
Multiple offices throughout Northern California, office in Denver,
meeting locations throughout the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. So, if you... would like either a first opinion or a second opinion, or even like Justin just talked about, they had a special need that they wanted to address, which is they had a child with disabilities that was going to be of age, going to become an adult, and they needed to make sure that they had the dollars set up in an appropriate fashion, which is, we've talked on a show before, if you have a child with either a drug dependency or special needs or you're just worried that what they would do if they get a large sum of money, you need to spend some time with a qualified attorney and get trust work done in order to distribute those dollars accurately. And that is exactly what Justin told these clients.
Yeah. And I tell you what, Pat, you know, you bring that up, but boy, it seems we've just seen so many situations at Hanson McLean over the years where things aren't set up.
4,000 plus households, as you can imagine, we've seen quite a few situations where it was just wasn't set up quite correctly, and we get to see the aftermath of bad decision making sometimes by people that, you know, didn't do the proper estate plan or bought the wrong product or many, many things.
Oftentimes it's just lack of planning.
It is lack of planning.
And I think, you know, we look at the studies show that half of us are going to die without a will or trust in place. Half of us across the country. A little more than half, actually. And I think, why is that? I think a couple of things. One,
we never think we're going to die.
Well, we know we're not going to. We know we're going to die, but not today.
Yeah.
It's sometime in the future. I'm not going to die today. So no sense getting my trusted up today.
Yeah.
I'll do it sometime in the future. Matter of fact, beginning of 2015, I had a goal for myself to redo my own living trust.
Did you do it?
I'm giving the long story. So I'm just telling you the story here. So I had a list of things I needed to do that year, redoing my trust, got to the end of the year, did nothing. Beginning of 2016.
Why'd you need to? You didn't die.
I didn't die. See?
See?
It would have been a hassle having to do it. So 2016, did the same thing. And I finally got it. Met with attorney a few months later. The trust actually sat on my desk at home for like 2 months. Just all I needed to do was find a time for my wife and I to sign it. Not going to die today, right? But finally, it took the time. We went and
read it again and signed it.
I think it was August or September of
So it only took you, 20 months after the goal?
So I'm just saying, I understand that doing that some estate planning is not always that fun, and it there's issues you got to work through, but it is important, particularly if you've got some circumstances where you don't want the assets to be distributed right away. And even more so, frankly, if you've got young minors still at home, you need to have a document in that it's going to state who's going to take care of the kids and who's going to take care of the money and how's it going to be doled out. We're out of time. We're here every weekend at the same time. Go to HansonMcLean.com for more information and to get our podcast. We'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.